This podcast episode is in partnership with and sponsored by Portland Textile Month. Portland Textile X Month Festival is part of a social enterprise founded and organized by Textile Hive to bring community and foster cross-pollination amongst textile enthusiasts, artists, businesses, schools, and cultural organizations. This October, PTM has over 50 events focusing on the theme of new traditions. By creating and fostering textile programming that champions grassroots collaboration and dialogue, PTM creates meaningful opportunities for change. They partner with facilitators and organizations rooted in community building, sharing, accessibility, inclusivity, diversity, and collaboration. As a mission-driven textile organization, they reflect and make connections between the vibrant and diverse textile community in Portland and beyond. Learn more and sign up for events at textilex.org, which is also linked in the show notes.
Welcome to the Material Culture Podcast, where we're exploring narratives of weaving, history, manufacturing, and the people who make it all possible. When people used to spin yarn or weave cloth, there were no such thing as podcasts, and instead they would sit and share stories. I hope that this can be a place for you to do just that, as we explore what it means to create. I'm your host, Rachel T. Snack, not to be confused with Rachel E. Snack, who runs Weaver House, the parent company of this podcast. I'm not really a weaver, but I'm fascinated by what it could look like to create while dreaming of a better world, and what it could look like if we took the time to listen to each other's stories. This month, we are partnering with Portland Textile Month, which means that instead of just one episode, we're releasing three. The theme for this year's textile festival is new traditions. How has this year of pandemic and heightened inequality shifted how we practice art and commerce? When I heard this question, I immediately thought that for a lot of people, these questions of equality and justice aren't new, and that much of what I've learned this year has been from Black and Native people who have graciously shared their wisdom with me. That's why, for our first two episodes, I really wanted to highlight Black and Native weavers, as these are cultures that our country is built on, without often being honored or recognized. What I might find to be new is often something that someone else has been practicing for generations. So I'm grateful to share this learning space with you. This episode, we talked to Nikhil Begay, the Diné weaver and shepherd behind Rainbow Fiber Co-op, an organization helping Navajo shepherds receive fair payment for their wool. Nikhil is deeply connected to their sheep and their people. It was so cool to hear from them about the history of Chura wool and how the values of Navajo culture influence their art practice. Just as a disclaimer, the Wi-Fi on the reservation when we called was a little spotty, so please excuse a few places where the audio gets jumbled. We are all more connected than we think. Join us as we find our common thread. So I'm here with Nikhil Begay. They're a Diné shepherd, fiber artist, and teacher based in Ganado, Arizona, on the Navajo Nation. Nikhil is the director of Rainbow Fiber Co-op and brings a wealth of knowledge and expertise to the project. Nikhil has experience working in technology and the nonprofit sector, as well as an extensive background in sheep flock management, wool production, traditional wool processing, and the weaving arts. They also wanted to take a minute to introduce themselves in Navajo.
And I said, greetings. They call me Nikhil Begay, and I am of the Bitterwater clan, born for the Big Water clan. My grandfathers are of the Apache Red Streak people clan, and my paternal grandfathers are of the Deer Springs people. And in our culture, we try to establish kinship before anything else because it brings us closer together.
So welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you here.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So can you tell me the story about how Rainbow Fiber Co-op came to be? Like, what needs did you see in the Dine Shepherd community and how did you seek to address them?
So last year, when the pandemic began, it hit the reservation especially hard. And at one point, the Navajo Nation led cases per capita in the U.S. So during that uncertainty, you know, there was a need to help families any way that anybody could help them. So there were nonprofits as well as, you know, just people who stepped up to help through donations, whether it was monetary or just certain items that families needed. And these efforts actually led to help a lot of families out, especially keeping our elders safe, you know, so they wouldn't have to go into town to shop. So things like personal items, PPE, food boxes, and even dog food and cat food were donated and distributed amongst Navajo families across the reservation. And livestock, especially sheep and their shepherds, were largely impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. But it also was before the pandemic. Prices, say like at an auction for live lambs on the hoof, you know, they weren't bringing in as much as, say, like cattle or just any other livestock animal. They were, you know, just selling pennies per pound, as well as wool, whether it was commercial wool or even churro wool. Some traders, which we still have here, that kind of are on the outline of the reservation of what we call border towns, some of them weren't buying Navajo churro wool because it was too coarse. But come last year, this is just like a, you know, everybody was just awake to seeing everything and how largely shepherds were impacted by this. So traders, as well as auction houses and even companies from the Midwest that would come in and purchase Navajo grown wool, you know, they were unable to do that. So a lot of Navajo families, they had to resort to doing other things with it. And this is, you know, wool on a large scale where they have really huge burlap bags full of really great wool. So shepherds were finding new uses for it. And, you know, I've even heard of a family who insulated a new house, but there were other shepherds in very remote areas that were unable to do anything with their wool at all. And their only other option was just to discard it. And Navajo churro wool being classified as a coarse wool, you know, nobody wanted it. No, even if the pandemic was happening, no one wanted to purchase it. And if they did, shepherds were only getting paid, oh, I'd say about a penny a pound for white wool. And oftentimes, traders and other outside buyers wouldn't even buy colored churro wool because they saw it as just being so useless. However, these sheep and their wool are important to the history of my people. You know, these were the first sheep that were introduced to us. So when I got together with a few friends who are very popular on social media, especially Instagram, a fellow fiber artists, friends, we had a conversation about this, like, what could we do to help shepherds and sheep that just weren't getting the help, you know? So at that time, it was like, okay, well, what if we raise money and buy hay to alleviate costs? And like, okay, but, you know, even if we fed them, they're still going to have the wool, right? So I spoke to my friend, Kelly Dene, who is a fellow shepherd of Navajo churro sheep, and she lives in the Bay Area. And we came up with the idea that is Rainbow Fiber Co-op, that, you know, we raised money to help shepherds that still raise Navajo churro sheep and purchase their wool. And once we get it purchased, we take it into the mill to have it processed into yarn. And then we sell that yarn to start the process over again the next year. Sadly, this year, you know, since we're just starting up, we weren't able to buy all of the churro wool across the reservation, but we were able to work with three of the largest flocks of Navajo churro sheep on the reservation.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, I love all the different ways that you were thinking about those needs. And then, I don't know, you just kind of narrowed it down. Like, no, they don't need help feeding the sheep. They need help like getting buyers for the wool. And it's cool that you guys were able to find a way to step in there and really fill a physical need. Now, I understand also that the Navajo churro wool is really important culturally and historically to your people. Can you tell me more about that?
It is. So, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen that show, Antiques Roadshow, right? And there was a man there who brought out this blanket. Unbeknownst to him, it was like a first phase chief blanket. And it sold for like a ton of money. But the important thing is that it survived so many years. I think it was like from the early 1800s. And, you know, when the sheep were introduced in the 1500s, along came the Chora sheep from Spain and Portugal. You know, my ancestors saw the value in wool and the value in switching over to a pastoral type life. And with going back to that Antiques Roadshow, the person on there who brought in that spectacular woven blanket, you know, I would bet, I don't know, good money that that was woven out of churro wool of that time. And, you know, just things that are found nowadays in like heirloom collections or, you know, in museums, a lot of them are churro. So they withstand the test of time. So it's like very important to continue to use it within our own weavings, but as well as continuing to raise the sheep that our ancestors raised so long ago.
And I understand that the name Rainbow Fiber Co-op even is kind of derived from this cultural importance of sheep and that there's a whole story behind that. Do you think you could tell me more about that?
Sure, I can. So it was told to me by my grandfather, the story of the creation of the earth, the universe. And during that creation, we believe in so many deities. They were in a meeting and they were creating the earth and every living being that will live on the earth. And one of them was sheep. And we have a God who we call Talking God because he's the only God that speaks, of course, their sacred language that humans don't understand, but he also spoke human language. So he was like the one of the connections between human beings and the deities, right? So he got the idea of creating an animal for the people. And what they did was they collected different colors of clouds. So white clouds during the daytime were collected and black clouds at night were collected. And these grayish blue clouds during a rainstorm and snowstorms were collected, as well as yellow clouds when the sun was rising and red clouds when the sun was setting. And these clouds were molded into the shape of sheep. It was actually the rainbow deities who said, okay, well, we want to place, you know, something special into this. So they were the ones who actually collected the red clouds and molded it into the first brown sheep. And they said that these brown sheep will be very, very rare and that they will test the humility of the people, you know? So if we lost our spiritual beliefs as well as, you know, let greed take over, then one of the things that the elders said is that the sheep will then start to go away, right? So what they did was they formed the clouds into the bodies of the sheep, and they used willow branches broken into four pieces to create the legs. And then they used crystals and placed them on the head to create the eyes. And another contribution the rainbows made were a piece of themselves on each animal to form their horns and their hooves. So as they were doing this, the deities were also consuming sacred wild tobaccos that grow here in our area. And one of them is called the sheep tobacco. And that tobacco plant, it grows a leaf that looks like a sheep's ear. And that's the part that is also used in that sacred smoke. So they collected those leaves and placed them on the head of the sheep to create their ears. And as that was happening, and as they were reciting sacred chants and sacred songs and praying over these new creatures, the wind deities swept through and they blew first life into these animals. And so came the sheep. And the rainbow people, or the rainbow deities, they are also a connection between earth and sky. We say that, you know, they radiate beauty, but they're also very protective. So, you know, the bow shape that they have is said to be like an arch of protection over the earth, as well as, you know, a connection between the earth and the heavens. So when the sheep were created in their realm, they were sent upon the backs of the rainbow people to the earth, and then given to what we call ourselves, our five-fingered beings. We don't call ourselves humans, but, and that was the introduction of sheep to our people. So to pay homage to our beliefs and just to, you know, the beauty of a rainbow and what it signifies in our culture, plus their contribution to the creation of sheep, we decided to name our co-op Rainbow Fiber Co-op, because if you get a hold of some brown wool, it is just very, very beautiful. And it's also, like I said, very, very rare to have brown sheep. And that was the amazing part of the story was, you know, now with modern technology and all of this, we have become able to determine that genetically brown sheep are very rare. So this was like my ancestors' telling of how recessive it is to get brown sheep and how it's a blessing when you do. And I just thought that was just brilliant.
It's cool too, like the rainbow signifying kind of your connection to the divine, and sheep kind of being the physical expression of that. I don't know. It's also beautiful and just like radiates kind of like this idea of gratitude and humility. That's like, you know, key to that story of how sheep came to be, but also just, I don't know, what a cool thing to like keep as a central practice of Rainbow Fiber Co-op. I think that that's such a cool story and obviously so meaningful to you. Yeah. You're also getting to kind of partake in the work that your ancestors have done for a really long time. What has that been like? What does it mean to you to be able to do that?
Well, first of all, I'm like very thankful. And I think I could say that for my grandmothers as well. They're very thankful that one of their grandchildren is into raising the sheep and using the wool, because, you know, times are changing. We're living in a very fast-paced world where, you know, you have to have a great job to make a living, you know, so it's becoming challenging to continue raising sheep. And, you know, this is a story that came to me like a while ago, or a thought that popped through into my head a while ago. Like, why do I love sheep? And why am I so like, you know, curious about everything that pertains to shepherding? And I actually worked up the courage to talk to my grandmother about this. And I'd asked her, like, why do you think I am so into sheep and so into using the wool and so into weaving and, you know, learning more about this? And she told me a very sweet story, actually. She said that when I was a newborn baby and I had a piece of the umbilical cord, which is very sacred in our culture, you know, because it's the connection between baby and mother for 9 months. So when it dries and it falls off after the child is born, it is then usually placed in a very special place. Some people, they'll keep it in a ceremonial home, which we call hogans. That way the child grows up and always remembers home and will always want to come home and be home. Other people will place the umbilical cords, say, just in a very like specific place with a specific purpose. Say if they wanted them to become a great horse rider, they'll place it with the horses, you know? But for me, my grandmother said that with all the children that she has and all the grandchildren that, you know, were being born within that time, she was unsure who would take the responsibility on of continuing the life way. So when I was born, I guess I could say that she chose me to continue what she was doing. So what she did was, is when my umbilical cord dried and fell off when I was a baby, she took it to her sheep pens, to the corral that they stayed in at night. And she placed it in the heart of the corral. And she offered up a prayer, not only to, you know, the universe, but she also offered up a prayer to my future and to the sheep, and that I be the one to continue what she and her mother and, you know, everybody before her was doing, which is shepherding and weaving. So I feel very honored that she did that for me when, you know, I had no idea that she did that until she told me. So it's just very, very, oh, excuse me, I'm getting a little emotional. So it's just very, very nice of her to do that.
Yeah, it's so special. It's like a gift that she gave you before you were even born, or I mean, as you were born. That and it's so cool that you stuck with it. You know, what is your relationship like with the sheep? I feel like it's really obvious when you look at your Instagram that you like love your sheep a lot. Yeah, tell me more about that.
So my relation to them, you know, they are like, wow, they are like my children, you know. Like one thing, again, going back to that story that my grandma told me, she said, you know, I've always just wanted your mind, your heart, your being to be with the sheep. So, you know, the sheep have given me an opportunity to travel. So no matter where I am on, you know, this beautiful green and blue earth, my mind and my heart are just always with the sheep. You know, if I'm on the East Coast, I'll just pop up at the crack of dawn there, but it's still, you know, just a little over midnight here. And I'll be texting my dad like, "Hey dad, how are the sheep? Are you sure they're okay? Did they get water today?" So, you know, like my relationship is just thinking of them first and caring for them always. Another teaching that I was taught by my grandparents is that we take care of the sheep and they'll take care of us. And, you know, growing up, and you're in school, you know, you're trying to be cool and have the latest and greatest thing, you know, keeping up with the trends. I thought that's what they meant, was like, okay, I take care of the sheep, and then there's a point in time where I'll sell the lambs and make money so I can buy myself these cool shoes or whatever, you know. But it wasn't that. Now, as an adult, I have learned that the sheep, through caring for them, have taught me very special life lessons. In a sense, it's their way for caring for me. Because, I mean, if I wasn't doing this, I really don't know where I'd be right now, actually. I'd probably be wild out there somewhere.
It's really cool that you take care of them and that they're able to provide for you. And also just that, you know, through the lifetime of a sheep, you might make lots of different materials and garments and wool and projects with even just one sheep. Like, do you have any sheep that come to mind that have been like a special relationship like that for you?
Yes, actually. So I primarily weave twill saddle blankets. And in these saddle blankets, you utilize three different colors. Usually it's like a black, a gray, and a white. So there have always been three sheep that I'll, you know, whenever I harvest their wool, I'll use their wool to weave every piece. So it'll, you know, when I weave the saddle blanket, it'll be specifically from these three sheep. But there was one sheep who just had just very, very gorgeous wool that I couldn't find myself to card it and spin it, because at the base, where it would grow out from the skin, it was a dark gray. And then the outer coat, which is kind of like hair, but it's still a wool fiber, it was kind of like a steely gray. So it was just, it just had this cool ombre effect from going dark to light. So I thought to myself, like, how could I not ruin this really pretty wolf? I just remembered stories from a long time ago. And these weavers, what they would do is weave these very elaborately designed saddle blankets for their eligible sons. And what they would do is like use really vibrant colors and just have a lot of tassels that included those vibrant colors, or wool tufts at the base and at the end of the saddle pads. So that way, when he's riding his horse and you look, you can see the nice wool tufts bouncing up and down, and it just looks like a very fancy saddle blanket. But in reality, to other mothers who had eligible daughters, it would kind of be that sign like, hey, this is my son and he's single and he's available for marriage. When I attempted my first tufted weaving, I just was like blown away at how beautiful it was. So then my favorite wool that, you know, I wanted to showcase coming off of one of my favorite sheep, you know, that was like my way of always keeping it special to my flock, if that makes any sense. Only a few of those pieces would have those wool tufts from her. Her name was Astrid, from Astrid and her beautiful wool.
I feel like that really makes it like a team effort when you can see, you know, the finished product, and then you can also look out there in the field and be like, oh, there's Astrid. Like, she's got that special wool that you could like recognize. And I don't know. It's so cool to think about having that close of a relationship to your sheep. And right, I don't know how many people are out here using wool products that came from a sheep somewhere and will never get that experience, you know?
If I had eligible sons to marry off, then, you know, in a way, Astrid would be responsible for finding them somebody.
That's so cool. Aww, I love thinking about that. And you said that recently you got to kind of learn more about the spinning process too, and the yarn production that you had never known before. What was that like?
Starting in the spring, my friend Kelly and I, we had actually wrote a grant, and we were awarded a startup grant from First Nations Development Institute in Colorado. And that actually helped us begin the process of getting Rainbow Fiber Co-op to move forward. And in that grant proposal, we wrote that for these three flocks to alleviate their costs of shearing, that we'd allocate money to pay for it. So we visited the shepherds and we paid for their shearings. And this allowed us to really get a hands on their wool and help them sort and grade when they got to shearing. And this summer, we were able to actually pick up and purchase all of their wool. And after we got it cleaned and sorted into different lots, we shipped it to a place called Mora, New Mexico, where Mora Valley Spinning Mill is. You know, if I'm processing wool on my own, I can see the process from start to finish. But in most times, I'll have it sent out to a mill and processed into roving. So when I get it back, I just spin it. And I guess I could admit that I was just very removed from that processing. And when we were able to visit Mora Valley Spinning Mill, I saw like they had one area that was just dedicated to receiving the wool and then cleaning it and skirting it. And then it went through a big tumbler to get more of the debris out and the dirt out. And then it went to another area of the mill where it was scoured or washed a few times. And then it was moved to a little add-on to the mill, which was kind of like a sunroom. And I just found that room just so cool. Like, just being able to be, you know, in any kind of sunroom with a lot of windows is cool, but to see how they used it, you know, there were no like industrial fans or anything in there. They were just using the sunlight that was coming in to dry those wool on these huge racks. And that was just like, wow. I mean, if I was doing it by hand, I would just, you know, drape it over the clothesline or something and let it dry out for a few hours. But just to see how they were able to build a specific room for a specific surface while harnessing, you know, the sun, which rises every day, that was just like, wow. When it's dried, they then take it to another tumbler where it opens up the individual locks of wool. And when it's finished going through that process, they'll take it to a clean area and lay it out on their concrete floor and then spray it with the non-static agent. And I believe in that spray, it was just like isopropyl alcohol plus water. And the reason that they did that was because the next process was to run it through the carders. And anybody listening out there, if you're familiar with like hand carders, which have, you know, these little 8-inch by 4-inch like paddles, and you just have tines on each one and pull it and brush basically, or you have a drum carder, which is like 12 inches, but it's like a little barrel with just tines all the way around, and you use a crank and spin it. You know, this like was on a large scale. Like, so that was also mind blowing. And it's like, just the scale of, you know, the production that they need to do was just like, wow. So after it goes through the carders, it's then separated and made into roving. And their machine was also pretty brilliant because it also drew out the roving to make it easier to spin. And it just like coils in this another huge barrel. And, you know, these are just amounts of wool that I just could not imagine. And then those piles of roving would then go to a machine that could hold on each side 20 bobbins. And what this machine does is spins the roving into yarn. And, you know, like having never had to think about it, because, you know, I just pack up the wool, go to the post office, send it to them. And, you know, a couple of months later, I get yarn or roving. I just was like, again, blown away. It was just, wow.
Yeah, I think it's crazy how many different people and processes go into creating, you know, just one, you know, saddle blanket or something like that. Like thinking about that, even you who have such a hands-on experience with the sheep, like this yarn process was new to you, and that there's always more that we can be learning about kind of what the things that are happening to make the industry happen, you know? The theme of this conversation is kind of new traditions and what kinds of things over the course of 2020 we've adopted that are helpful to fiber arts practices. Do you have any kind of new traditions that you've adopted or even like older traditions or values that you think would help other weavers in developing their craft?
So I think a new tradition could be appreciating old traditions from people like my people who are still living the pastoral life way. You know, that is a tradition that was passed on from their parents and then their parents. And, you know, you could go as far back as to when the first sheep were introduced to the Southwest. You know, just knowing and appreciating that hard work, you know, is a tradition in itself, as well as appreciating the hard work that goes into making the items from wool and fiber, whether you do it yourself or whether you do you send it into a mill, because in a sense that's like a tradition supporting other traditions, you know.
I think that that's something that we can all be doing more of in our practices for sure. Yeah, so what's next for Rainbow Fiber Co-op?
So as we're recording this, next week on Thursday, which I believe is the 14th, Kelly will be here on the reservation, and we will be driving to Mora Valley to pick up our first official batch of yarn. And the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday after that, we're going to be doing a dye class with a She's a Navajo weaver, as well as a dye specialist, maybe a master dyer, because she is highly knowledgeable in natural plant dyes, as well as, you know, the synthetic dyes. She's kind of like the go-to person to teach these things. Her name is Eileen Nagel. So we'll be working with her and dyeing a lot of our white yarn just to make fun little boxes. And, you know, we're going to market them when it's all done. And hopefully we generate enough sales to continue the wool buy next year to pay our bills with everybody that we work with, like the mills and other consultants, you know. And when we get the finished product back next year, then the cycle will repeat again. So ultimately our goal is just to keep ourselves sustained and able to continue buying, processing, and selling Navajo grown yarns. Eventually we want to expand and add in more flocks of Navajo Churro sheep, and maybe even expand to adding in softer knitting yarns or roving or even raw fleeces, you know, to generate the income that is needed to continue.
Wow. Yeah, that's really exciting. Well, cool. Yeah. Thank you so much for being on the podcast and for sharing with us about your practice.
Oh, you're welcome. And thank you for having me.
I loved hearing so many stories from Nikhyle about the value of sheep and the raw material of wool. I keep thinking about how wool was and is essential to life on the reservation. To think about living in partnership with the land is such a stark contrast to our fast-paced culture that discards materials so quickly. I think it's inspiring to think about how, just like when Nikhyle takes care of their sheep take care of them, maybe we too can find ways to live in reciprocal relationship with the earth and each other. I think too about not counting our sheep, taking nothing for granted, and greeting each new season of life as it comes in humility. As I said earlier, we are doing extra episodes this month in partnership with Portland Textile Month, one of which is a community submissions episode based on the topic of new traditions in fiber art. Thanks to those of you who have submitted so far, but submissions are still open and we'd love to hear from you. You can find the submission instructions linked in the show notes. There are also lots of other great events and artists featured online and in person, so definitely check them out while you can. A huge thank you goes out to Nikhyle for our conversation this month, who you can find on Instagram at Navajo Weaver or on the Rainbow Fiber Co-op website. Thanks also to Philadelphia-based musician Michael Myers for the use of his song Weave off the album There Is Only Light. We are currently publishing episodes of Material Culture monthly, so we'll be back to our scheduled programming in November. If you love the podcast, we would so appreciate you leaving a rating on Apple Podcasts. And if you have comments or questions for us, please email us at the address linked in the show notes. Thanks so much for joining us. And until next time, let's keep learning about what it means to create with each other in mind.